Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Welcome to the Bike Radar podcast, brought to you by the team behind BikeRadar.com, Cycling Plus, and MBUK magazines. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe. And if you can do so, leave us a rating on your podcast provider of choice. It really helps us reach other cyclists like you.
Welcome to the Bike Radar podcast with me, George Scott, the editor-in-chief of Bike Radar. And today I'm joined by two of our senior technical editors, one from our mountain bike team, one from our road team. I'll start with you, Tom. Tom Marvin, how are you this afternoon?
Very well, thanks, George. Yeah, not too bad at all.
Excellent. And Warren, you're here from the road team. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. A bit jet-lagged, but not so bad.
Yes, jet-lagged because you were out in Taiwan last week. Firstly, for the giant TCR launch, which we covered on the podcast and on the site and on our YouTube channel last week, but also for the Taipei Cycle Show. So how was the trip?
It was really good. Yeah, really interesting. It was good to get behind the scenes at Giant and actually see how they make bikes, which is all extremely impressive. And the Taipei show is always fun, although I would say, compared to all the previous years I've been, and I've been sort of heading over there since about 2014, I think, the quality of product on show now is just improving all the time. It used to be back in the 2010s, as it were, there was quite a lot of mad, weird, strange stuff that you'd never see outside of Asia. Now it's all a pretty high standard, to be honest.
Excellent. Yeah. What was your highlight from the show?
I think there's a couple of new brands out there that are potentially quite disruptive. There's L2, who are making some very interesting, very affordable electronic group sets. They look quite interesting. I'm currently in WhatsApp conversations with them to try and get some test product over here. And there's a new brand out of Korea that have come from Archery. They make Olympic standard bows for Team GB and the Korean Olympic team. And they've moved into bikes. And they've got an advisor on board from a very prestigious Italian family. And they've got some really nice looking bikes, which you should be able to read about on Bike Radar soon, I should imagine.
I saw that you were on an email, you said you had to smuggle a carbon fiber bow from this brand back in your hand luggage.
Yeah, it was the gift they gave me. It was a full-size carbon fiber arrow. And it's like, well, yeah, this isn't going to look good at the airport. So I have to find a way of trying to secure that. But
made it back through customs.
Yeah, it's made it back now. What I'm going to do with it, I have no idea.
Interesting that you mentioned L2. We have covered that on the site already. Go and check that out. In fact, I'll put a link to that story in the description. There's lots of kind of noise being made about both this brand and generally challenger brands in the group set market. Certainly on the roadside, we've got SRAM and Shimano and Campec have had things sewn up, but there's L2 and there's Microshift. And just generally, there's quite an interesting story developing.
Yeah, there's a few more out there, like Sensor, which I've just tested one of their group sets, actually branded State on a gravel bike. That was quite impressive. And then there was another one out there called Gear Drive, again, at the sort of lower end of the market. But again, the prices that they seem to be quoting and everything, it looks like Shimano won't have that budget end of the market sewn up if these guys keep progressing the way they are.
Excellent. Well, maybe that's a topic for a future podcast. Tom, by the time this pod goes out, the new Specialized Epic will have been launched. That was a launch you went on, what, before Christmas?
Yeah, December. We went on the launch event, but I have had the bike here in the UK as well for a few weeks. So had plenty of time razzing around the trails on that. The Epic 8, as they're officially calling it. Yeah, a really interesting bike. I guess the Epic has always kind of been known for its brain technology, which is a mechanical lockout for the compression circuits, which is like an inertia valve, which kind of bumped out of the way when you hit a bump, so you didn't have to faff around with on-bar lockout levers. However, the brain has now disappeared from the Epic, and it's been replaced on the SOX one by the new SRAM RockShox flight attendant, which they are sort of launching with a bike for cross-country. It's previously been in longer travel applications, and now it's in cross-country, which I kind of feel is its natural home. But they've done some really interesting stuff on that as well. So they have like a very specific middle tune for their shocks on the Epic, both the SRX1 and the sort of the low ones, which use an on-bar twist lockout system with a digressive tune, which is all kind of techie, but kind of interesting and all kind of works very well.
Well, I know that you spoke to someone from Specialized, and I think someone from RockShox for our podcast earlier in the week. So if you're interested in that, then go and check it out. But we've been speaking about what you've been up to. Now we're going to focus on what's coming up and what the two of you are up to right now, because it is Bike of the Year time. It's our annual bike test bonanza on Bike Radar, but also the test runs in our magazine, Cycling Plus on the road side of things, and Gravel, Mountain Biking UK, of course, all things MTB. So Woz and Tom, you're just two people from our test team who have been busy selecting and testing bikes in recent months, but we are now absolutely in the heat of testing season. Our Bike of the Year winners are announced on the 10th of May, but today we're going to talk a bit more about the bikes and the categories involved. So Tom, just before we get started, how long have we been doing Bike of the Year?
So I did a little bit of digging around, and so on the mountain bike side of things, What Mountain Bike, which was a magazine that's closed about 4 or 5 years ago, they were doing Trail Bike of the Year for quite a long time. And I found a video from 2010, which was pretty cool, and it was their ninth year. So that puts Trail Bike of the Year starting in 2001. So this will be the 23rd Trail Bike of the Year, which is pretty cool. And Enduro Bike of the Year, I believe, started in 2017. So this will be the seventh. And we'll be in our third year, I think, of E-Bike of the Year and second or third year of Budget Bike of the Year on the mountain bike. So, yeah, it's grown in many respects over the past 20 years.
Yeah, very similar on the roadside. We've been doing this test for decades. So just before we get started, actually, let's recap on the categories that we have got in this year's test. So, Woz, there's five categories in the drop bar and urban test. What can we expect to see in May?
Right, well, we've got road endurance, road race, which we incorporate all-rounder race bikes and aero race bikes into that. Then we've got gravel, we've got the urban e-bike, so straight utility bike, and then we've got budget as well. So the selection process is hard, but we're getting a really good wide variety of bikes even within those subcategories.
Well, I think we've got five bikes in each of those categories, so 25 bikes across that part of the test. And Tom, what have we got coming up on the mountain bike side of things?
So we've got Trail Bike of the Year, Enduro Bike of the Year, E-Mountain Bike, which is split into two between SL and sort of, I guess, full fat would be the common term for them, and budget ones as well. So eight trail bikes, eight enduro bikes, eight in total E-Mountain bikes, and at the moment, five or six budget bikes.
Woz, let's dive a little bit deeper into the drop bar and urban test. So you mentioned there the road endurance category. It's a really big year for endurance bikes. We had the Giant Defy launch towards the end of last year. We had the Specialized Roubaix. I know you're looking after this category. You're doing all of the testing. So what are your highlights so far?
I mean, what's really interesting about this category is that endurance has different facets now. It used to be an endurance bike was just a road bike with slightly relaxed ride position to make them a bit more comfortable over longer distances. But now we're seeing, you know, you got on one side, you've got a bike like the Giant Defy, which is Pro Tour race bike light, super agile, and very much a pure road bike. And then you can move over to something like the Roubaix or one of the sort of new sort of upstart brands, Lauf, with their Utold. And these are very much all road. If it was 5 or 6 years ago, they'd probably be classed as gravel bikes. But you know, very capable on the road, but can handle a bit of poorer road surfaces and even light gravel quite well. So it's a really interesting category to do. And it's good to see that there's quite a lot of, you know, sort of diverse design going on there.
I don't want to test you, but can you name the bikes in this test off the top of your head in the endurance category? Or do you know so far? I know it's still being decided.
I've got more than I need, so I'm going to be ending up whittling it down. At the minute, we've got Lauf Utold, Canyon Endurace, Giant Defy Advanced, Specialized Roubaix, Cube Agree, Oro Gold STC, and new, as of yet, launch bike from Cinelli called the Pressure. And I'm going to be whittling it down from that long list into the best five, as it were.
Well, taking this back to the start of the process, when did you start putting together that shortlist of bikes for the 2024 test?
Probably October last year.
So what, we're 6 months in already? Yeah. Wow.
That just means it's 6 months till the next one.
It never stops.
Yeah, Bike of the Year never stops. It's an ongoing joke in the office. There's always the big build-up to the May release, but it is an ongoing year-round process. So yeah, full credit to Tom and Woz and all of the guys involved. Tom, I'll come to you next, actually. We'll skip between the road and the mountain bike side of things. So let's start with the trail test, because this is your category. How long have you in particular been doing the trail category in Bike of the Year?
I mean, I've been doing this job 11 years, and I think I must have contributed to at least 9 trail bikes of the year now. And I've written myself probably 7, I think, 7 or 8.
Do you know how many words you've written?
I dread to think.
Hundreds of thousands.
Yes.
How has the trail category evolved in that time? Because it is a category that has seen quite a bit of evolution as far as I can understand.
Yeah, I mean, trail bikes, I guess in some ways, are similar to endurance bikes on the roadside in that the genre itself has evolved hugely and is an incredibly broad encompassing of mountain bikes. So it's quite a tricky one in some ways to nail down what is like a really good trail bike. So what I tend to do is alternate between, you know, the shorter travel bikes, say, you know, between 130, well, centering around 130 mil travel, maybe 120 to 140 at the back, and then slightly longer travel ones as I have done this year. So last year was, again, a number of shorter travel bikes. Bikes such as like the Trek Top Fuel, for example, would be an archetypal one, or the YT Izzo. Whereas this year, I've jumped all the way up to, I guess, the White T160 RS being like the biggest in inverted commas bike. So 160 mil fork, 150 mil rear travel. Because effectively, a trail bike should be one that you can ride all day, everywhere. At the same time, these days, trail bikes kind of could enter like a UK enduro race. It's incredibly broad. So yeah, that's sort of, and I guess the capability is what's sort of grown with those bikes. You know, they're incredibly good bikes that are designed to do absolutely everything.
I know you really focused on the price range for these bikes as well. So I think it goes from, just looking at your notes, £3,000 for the White T160 up to around £4,200 for the GT Sensor. So, you know, it's a lot of money, but they are bikes that people can go out and buy and afford.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, usually we sort of try and keep a slightly tighter price range. 3.5 to 4.2 was the initial brief. White, in between ordering the bike and actually getting it, they dropped the price by £1,200, which is great, you know, for the consumer. You know, possibly a little spec change here and there. But yeah, it's sort of that mid price point. Rob's Enduro bike test is sort of the next price bracket up. And Al's e-bikes is, you know, tends to be a chunk more expensive. But the trail bike really is that sort of like every person, do everything, do it all bike. So they need to be in that slightly more accessible price point, in my opinion.
Excellent. Well, lots to look forward to there. Just to list off some of the brands, we've got YT, Trek, GT, White, Scott, Cannondale, Canyon, and Marin in that test. So yeah, lots of great bikes to look out for in the trail bike category. Was back to Curly Bars. You mentioned this at the start. This year, we've combined the aero and the performance categories from last year. They were distinct in last year's test, but they've been combined into one race category for 2024. Simon Van Bromley's looking after this category, but why that decision to combine it into one?
I think because we are seeing more of that kind of convergence in bike design. You know, the distinct aero road bike and then the lightweight race bike are almost merging. You know, we've seen some of the biggest brands out there. You know, you've seen Specialized now with two generations of Tarmac. Since they, you know, discontinued making their aero bike. So the Tarmac has got all that aero knowledge that was gained and integrated it into it. And everybody seems to be sort of following suit. There are exceptions, but it's just that kind of having one bike that can do everything rather than two specialist bikes. We just feel that you know, that's going to give the best reward to taking our time on testing, really.
Well, you've mentioned some of the big name bikes, or at least one of them that's in, or on the shortlist for this year's race category. It's the Specialized Tarmac SL8. We're also looking at a Canyon Ultimate. There's Focus. There's a few other brands kind of around the edges that we're currently calling in for tests. So lots for Simon to get stuck into it, and definitely the man for the job, our in-house data and race nerd. I don't think Simon will mind me saying that. Tom, back to you. The next category to look at from the mountain bike side is the enduro category. So for the uninitiated like me, where do you draw the line now between trail and enduro in terms of travel?
I mean, it is a hard line to draw. You know, Rob will have 160 mil bikes in there, but he'll also have, you know, maybe up to 180 mil forks. So it's kind of that 160 to 180 bracket. Bikes that you would expect to see being raced at the EDR, or what was the Enduro World Series. And yeah, sort of, I guess in many respects, relatively race-focused bikes. Within that sort of travel category, you might also see park bikes, for example, though often it's just spec differences. I imagine Rob's probably sort of erred away from a little bit. So yeah, longer travel, they're a little bit more expensive. And actually his group of bikes this year are relatively diverse. I think, you know, the trail bike, you know, again, Warren was talking there about divergence of styles and tech. And I guess that's probably one of my take-homes from Trail Bike of the Year this year, is that actually a lot of the bikes are very similar. Whereas if you look at Rob's bikes, there is a little bit more divergence there in terms of the suspension platforms used. There's, you know, high pivot bikes in there and a few more interesting bits and pieces. So quite a varied group of bikes this year for Rob.
And Rob's been doing this category for a long time as well. So it's very distinct on the mountain bike side. You've been looking after trail for quite a long time, and Rob's been doing what, this for years, enduro?
Yeah, it must be seven years at least, I think.
Excellent. Well, he's definitely the man for the job for that category, throwing himself down Welsh mountain sides.
Yeah. I guess the things to point out of that, you know, like within that, you know, we might have only got seven or eight bikes or eight bikes and things, but there is a process to get to those that include, you know, like I think my list of original lists was 20 odd bikes. So, you know, there's a lot of whittling down and it's, yeah, a similar process for Rob. There's a lot going on. So it's nice to be able to pick some of the more interesting and new bikes as well.
How do you try and strike that balance between what we know about when the Bike of the Year process starts, say in October, like Warren said, and then all of the bikes that are inevitably launched between then and now, because, you know, we're in the thick of launch season right now.
Yeah, it's tricky. Like, I have to admit, there's probably one or two bikes that have launched or, you know, we've become aware of in the last month that maybe should be in there. So it's always a tricky balance. It means that, you know, next year, you know, we may well get them in. The other thing to, you know, of note is that these bikes might be announced, but we may not be able to get hold of them. So it's a tricky process because it does take so long. I wouldn't say we miss things, but yeah, it'd be nice if we could just very quickly shuffle another bike in, but that's not the way the test always goes.
You mentioned as well the parameters that are set around the category. So the prices, the suspension travel, you know, that there could, in theory, be the potential to throw in a bike, but if it costs $2,000 more than the rest, then it doesn't become a comparative and fair test.
Yeah, we would stray away from that. The times when sort of those price brackets get blown away a little bit is when bike brands change the model prices in between, you know, that initial request and coming in, which does happen. You know, it happened a lot a couple of years ago, obviously, when, you know, the COVID sort of stuff was going on and bike availability was difficult. You know, I think at that point our price categories got absolutely blown apart. This year has been a little bit more stable, fortunately.
Good. And nice for White to actually drop the price, which is what? Yeah. That's quite a rare story.
It's like, you know, on paper, you look at that and you look at the other bikes that are going in the test and you sort of think, well, you know, in terms of value, there's almost no contest. How it rides, of course, is a different matter, potentially. But White have won a number of Trail Bike of the Years in the past, so it could do well.
One to watch then.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Well, it's come to a new category on the roadside. We've had urban e-bikes in and around the Bike of the Year test, but this year we fully incorporated it into Bike of the Year. I mean, this is a really fast-growing category.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's something that we've all spoken about, and it's definitely on our agenda. It's something that we actually want to actively be behind, I think, you know, encouraging people to get out of their cars, to, you know, just use a bike for all of those short journeys around town or commuting, et cetera, et cetera. It's got to be the way that we move forward. You know, there's so much congestion on the roads. It's really expensive car ownership. Fuel prices aren't getting any cheaper. Everything about it, these sorts of bikes makes sense. And to be honest, I've really enjoyed doing that this year because there's such variety of the type of bike that you can go for. You know, there's, you know, from Specialized, I've got like what's effectively a very light flat bar Swift round town bike that will really appeal to, you know, to seasoned cyclists. And then at the other end of the scale, I've got something like a bike from Tern called the NBD, which means no big deal. And that is such an easy bike to ride. It's so easy to live with. It's just everything about it is like so user friendly. You know, even the fact that, you know, e-bikes can be quite bulky things. This one stands on its end, so it doesn't take on much room in your, you know, in your garage or your hallway. And I really like that from testing purely performance products so much of the year to actually step out of yourself and go into something where you're not necessarily talking about gear ratios, you're not talking about frame angles, you're just talking about this sheer joy of riding a bike. And I'm quite excited about where we can go with this whole kind of urban mobility and transport rather than sport. I think it's a really good place to be.
Well, as you mentioned, this, you know, it's a really fast growing category. It's a really important category, and that's why we've included it in the full Bike of the Year test this year. It's quite a change of pace as well for you. You're looking after the road endurance category, the gravel category, and then urban e-bikes. So how do you switch from one to the other from day to day? What's the kind of change in mindset that you have?
Yeah, again, it's trying to put yourself in the position of not riding a bike for sport and using, and actually as part of this testing, you know, because most of them have got big racks and everything like that, I'm doing things like the weekly shopping or running errands on it and actually using the bikes as you would. And also with a few of these bikes, especially the ones with the kind of small wheel variety, they're like basically one size fits all. So I get my partner to ride it. I've got to have my neighbors, you know, going out on one of them. I've got a neighbor that's like a district nurse and she uses an e-bike every day. So I've lent a couple to her and said, I, you know, see how you get on with this and that sort of stuff. And so again, it's where you can draw in lots of thoughts and experiences from people that aren't, you know, full on testers. And you can really get to that point where they just go, I like this about it, I don't like this about it, that sort of thing, you know, which you might not necessarily think about if you're so ingrained in what we do every day.
Absolutely, yeah. Such a wide range of people who can use urban e-bikes. But from one e-bike category to the next, this is the EMTB, electric mountain bike category. Alex Evans, another of our senior technical editors based up in the Tweed Valley in Scotland, is looking after this one. Tom, you mentioned at the start that we've effectively split this category this year. So there's four full fat, full powered e-bikes, and then 4 SL or lightweight electric mountain bikes. That in itself is quite a fast growing and emerging category, what, over the past 12, 18 months?
Yeah, there's been a lot of like really important and interesting bikes come out in the sort of the super light or lightweight category. And I guess Alex's test is to reflect that and also to sort of show the breadth of what you can do with e-mountain bikes. You know, in some ways, it'd be an interesting comparison between, you know, living with full-powered, full-fat ones versus, you know, lighter-weight ones, because there's always going to be some sort of compromises with both categories. You know, the big full-fat ones are big, heavy bikes that weigh a lot, many, many kilos, whereas the lighter ones weigh a lot less. However, obviously, they offer either less assistance or lower power. So, yeah, his test is sort of really going to be delving into that and kind of working out what do you really need for most people. It'd be an interesting one, really good. There's some really cool bikes that have come out in the past 12, 18 months.
Yeah, it's a really interesting kind of buying decision that someone potentially needs to make between the full-powered bike and the SL bike. Alex is quite far down the road with his testing, so he's got the Canyon Strive on the full-powered side of things, alongside the Yeti 160E, the YC Decoy is another on the full-powered side. And then a few of the SL bikes he's looking at, he's got the Giant Trance X Advanced Z Plus, the Santa Cruz Heckler SL, a Specialized Kinevo SL, and then a White E Lite. So really good mix of bikes, 4 in each category. And Alex is a regular on the pod, so I'm sure he'll be on in future episodes to reveal the results of that one.
Regular on the pod and a regular on e-bikes. One of our in-house e-bike experts. He does an awful lot of them, and he knows his onions.
He does. He is the perfect rider for that job, and plenty of Scottish mountains for him to winch himself back up and plummet down the other side up in the Tweed Valley. And Warren, the final category that you're looking after, as I mentioned earlier, on the road and gravel side of things, is the gravel category. I mean, you've been riding gravel bikes since before the days gravel was even a thing. So how have you seen gravel evolve over the past few years of Bike of the Year?
Again, gravel is another one of those categories which diversity is the key. You know, I actually think I'm quite lucky in the categories that I've been testing this year that the bikes aren't all me too. You know, you've got that super light kind of race orientated gravel bike right up to, you know, sort of slack head angled, long front centered, kind of more rowdy bikes for great on gravel, but fantastic fun for riding in the woods and that sort of thing. So I think, you know, the lineup I've got this year, you know, reflects that diversity as well. And there's a good few new entrants this year, brand new bikes. I mean, Merida Silex, for instance, which I know Georgie rode on the launch back in Italy. So you've got a little bit of experience with that bike. I've been riding that and impressed with that. The new Santa Cruz Stigmata, another, you know, excellent bike. Canyon, new Grail, an updated Orbea Terra, the new GT Carbon Grade, which in its X version I really enjoyed earlier this year. That's like the dropper post and suspension fork equipped version of it, whereas this one is more like a lighter, racier version of that same platform. And there's, again, I've got too many bikes for this category, so I'm whittling that down, and there's a few sort of late entrants that might be arriving. But again, this is going to be a really tough category. There are some really exceptional bikes in this year.
Where every bike brand is getting into gravel, and there are so many launches, like you say, there's a few late entrants that are potentially trying to sneak their way into the gravel category for this year's Bike of the Year. That Merida Silex launch that you mentioned that I did go on, I think it was early to mid-October. Can't remember the exact dates. I do know it was the last time that I wore shorts and t-shirts. It was like it was the last hot sunny week they had out in Italy. So yeah, hopefully we'll see a return to that soon enough. Tom, the last category we spoke to you about was the electric mountain bike category. That is one of the pricier ones, inevitably, with the technology involved there. So Alex is looking at bikes around the 6 to 7 up to 9 to 10,000 pound mark. There's a little bit of a range involved with Alex's bikes. However, we do have an antidote to that in the budget category. So we introduced this last year, and it's back once again with Sarah testing 6 key budget bikes. So what can we expect from this one?
I think the interesting thing with budget bikes is actually it's always one of the most interesting tests to do. You know, like it's lovely, you know, getting your test schedule for the year and you see, oh, you know, super bike this and fancy bike that. But actually the really interesting ones to delve into are those budget bikes, simply because at that price point, the individual decisions that the product managers make have such a large impact on how the bike rides. You know, it's very easy to say, oh, they've all got like very similar aluminium hardtail frames, which is, you know, ostensibly relatively true. But, you know, a couple of degrees here and there makes a massive difference to a bike, or which tyres do they pick? You know, that probably has the biggest influence on pretty much anything. So I guess for Sarah, like, she'll be able to trial those different bikes and see those different approaches to what makes a good budget bike. Traditionally, budget bikes have always been more traditional in their shape, which you could argue that being, you know, taller, twitchier, maybe less easy to ride isn't great for someone who maybe isn't spend, you know, it's their first mountain bike. So I'm always really interested to see what's happening in the budget space, because that's both the culmination of trickle down over the past sort of 5 years of higher end tech, but also the sort of forward thinkingness of the product managers and engineers who get to design these bikes.
I had a very similar conversation with Ash, who's looking after the budget bikes on the road side of things, said exactly that. Those decisions that product managers make can make a real difference. Same applies across both mountain bikes and road bikes.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, you know, my trail bike of the year test, I think 7 of the 8 bikes have Maxxis tyres. You know, Maxxis make great tyres, and the only bike that doesn't is the Trek, which has Bontrager tyres. But I would be surprised if all 6 bikes in Sarah's test have the same tyres. You know, and you know, when it comes to suspension, same thing. Like, mine are virtually all Lyrics and 36s, whereas I imagine there's a bit more diversity down there as well, which again helps you drill down into those sort of little intricacies of how a bike works.
Well, when we say budget bikes, these aren't necessarily cheap bikes. They're around, I think, £900 up to, what, £1,600. So, you know, there's still a lot of money to spend here. But when we describe budget bikes, we're talking about the kind of money that you can spend and get a really good bike for that money.
Yeah, 100%. You know, Sarah should be looking for, you know, actual proper off-road performance here. And I bet there's a number of bikes in there that really you could absolutely rip on.
Absolutely. Same on the road side as well. So Ashley Quinlan, again, another regular on the podcast, another one of our many senior technical editors, is looking after this category. He's a long way down the line, actually, with this. I know Ash is just starting to draw his conclusions. So he's looking at road bikes like the Pinnacle Laterite, I think it's how it's pronounced, £800 for that, all the way up to, what, £1,100 for the Cube Attain Pro. So on the road side, we've got Pinnacle, Specialized, Cube, Trek, a couple others that Ash is looking at. And then on the mountain bike side, we've got a real mix, actually. Caliber, White, Rock Rider from Decathlon, Merida, Giant, and a few other brands that Sarah's looking at up in the Tweed Valley. So yeah, a really important test. And actually, with prices rising over the past few years, as they have was, I think it's really important that we do continue to look at bikes that are relatively affordable.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That area of budget or more affordable bikes has, in the time that I've been doing, you know, doing this, which is more than a quarter of a century now, the quality has improved immeasurably. You know, there are some seriously, seriously good bikes around. You know, you've got, you know, Stonewall classics like the Specialized Alley, for instance, or Trek Stamani aluminium, you know, just fabulously capable bikes. And if it's, I wouldn't say it's your first bike, but it's your first serious bike. And if that first serious bike you get gives you that wonderful experience that we all know you can get from riding a great bike, it's just going to keep you involved. Whereas many years ago, you could have bought a bike at that sort of money and gone, oh, this is, I hate it. You know, it's bendy, it's this, it doesn't shift properly. Everything about it, it feels dead and that sort of thing. And we're just not getting that anymore. I mean, I'm always surprised that now when I'm riding the more affordable end of bikes, just how good some of them can be. I've just, you know, prior to jumping two-footed into all the bike of the year stuff, I did a kind of affordable gravel bikes test, and I was genuinely surprised at how good some of those bikes were and how much fun they were. And that's really what it's all about. So,
absolutely, yeah. Like, inevitably and rightly, there is a lot of discussion about how prices have risen, but there are still some really good bikes available for really good money. And we won't get into it on this podcast, but there's still a decision to be made about rim brakes and disc brakes at that price level. I think there's one rim brake bike in there.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, there is still a decision, you know. I know where my allegiances lie, but we'll leave it at that.
That's a topic for another day. We've mentioned lots of bikes, lots of brands in this podcast. I'm sure the vast majority will get in. But as we say, the team are busy testing right now. So some tough decisions to be made over the next 2 months, I'm sure. But there you have it. That is the news. Bike of the year is coming. We've got a whole team of testers out every day testing these bikes before we release the results in mid-May. Just under 2 months to go, we'll be bringing you much more on Bike Veer, on Bike Radar across the website, YouTube channel, and the podcast much closer to the time. So stay tuned for everything Bike Veer related. Tom, it's been great to have you on.
Thank you, George. Yeah.
And Woz, great to have you back in the UK. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, George.
And thanks for listening. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast through your podcast platform of choice and go and leave us a review. It really helps us get the podcast out to more people just like you. We'll speak to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Bike Radar podcast. If you've not done so already, please subscribe and share with your friends, or leave us a rating if you've enjoyed this episode.